Off the ball. This is News Talk.
Welcome back to Tuesday's Off the Ball. Nathan with you this evening. Coming up on the football show in around an hour, we're going to talk to Jacob Steinberg about all that's going on with West Ham, both on and off the pitch, and what sort of a resolution may come about with the various issues involving the supporters and the owners. We'll check in with Kevin Kilbane as well, right on the full-time whistle at Old Trafford, where Manchester United are taking on Sevilla. The great, and we can use that term about him, Willie John McBride is going to join us in just a couple of minutes' time as well to look back on the last time Ireland won away in both France and England in the same year. Nice. When was it, Dan?
I have no idea. I thought you were going to say the great Richie McCormack has just joined us as he's coming to the studio.
The great Richie McCormack has just joined us.
Thanks,
as well.
Thanks, Nathan. Yeah, and Dan. It's very kind of you.
1972, Dan. 1972.
Don't remember that now.
Didn't win the Grand Slam because Scotland and Wales wouldn't travel to Dublin to play
the
games
in the midst
because
of the
troubles.
Oh, yeah. And
it
the
was
English
the
were
weeks
our
after Bloody Sunday. And the English were our friends. The English did play the game and then came to Dublin the following year. And their captain at the speech afterwards said, they got well beaten by Ireland, said, we mightn't be much good, but at least we turned up.
Yeah, and then they didn't screw us over on the Rugby World Cup bid last year. Was that one of the angles?
Screw
as well?
Us over. Wow.
That's the language that was used by rugby aficionados at the time. Mm. It was an outrage in rugby country.
Not like the Welsh, who got a harsh talking to when they came over for the game a couple of weeks ago.
How
at the dinner the night before.
Oh, really?
I don't know how the Welsh fan.
No bread. Serious. Yeah.
No
serious. A dinner standoff.
I think you're getting gravy with that chicken, do you?
Yeah.
Think again.
What happened now? Yeah. Could have had all the dinners in the world if you just supported us. Yeah. Richie, 20 minutes gone at Old Trafford.
And no goals, but there have been chances for both sides. Romelu Lukaku bullying Simon Kjaer in the Sevilla defence. Pretty early on there, Jesse Lingard and Marouane Fellaini both starting brightly after being introduced from that winning side against Liverpool at the weekend. But Sevilla have had chances of their own. Luis Muriel blazing over and looked easier to hit the target. But as you say, Nathan, 20 minutes played at Old Trafford. Scoreless, and scoreless it remains too on aggregate. And no goals to speak of either at the Stadio Olimpico, where Roma are up against Shakhtar Donetsk, and Roma really need a victory. They're 2-1 down on aggregate following the first leg. Same amount of time elapsed in that one. Plenty of games in the Championship as well tonight, and a few early goals, one of which has come for ex-Galway man Ryan Manning, who's headed QPR in front away to third-placed Aston Villa. At Oakwell, it's still Barnsley 0, Norwich City 0. Brentford, though, have the lead against second-placed Cardiff. It's Neil Maupay who's gotten the goal for the hosts at Griffin Park tonight. It's currently Ipswich 0, Hull City 1. The goal for Hull this evening coming from Marcus Henriksen, while it's still scoreless at Bramall Lane. Sheffield United up against Burton Albion, and Wolves and Reading, they too are scoreless at Molineux. In the EA Sports Cup first round as well, the game is just underway in Ferry Carrig, where Wexford are taking on Cove Ramblers. No goals to speak of as of yet. While back across channel, it's understood Mark Hughes is in talks to become the new manager of Southampton tonight. The Saints last night sacked Mauricio Pellegrino with the side just a point and a place above the Premier League relegation zone. Hughes played for Southampton for two seasons towards the end of the last century. Willie Mullins trained a hat-trick of winners on the opening day of the Cheltenham Festival today. He teamed up with Ruby Walsh twice for victory, firstly for the 6-5 on favourite footpad in the Arkle, while 92 shot Benny DeGio claimed the Mayor's Hurdle. And his third win for Mullins came with the 92 shot Rathvinden in the National Hunt Chase. Mullins narrowly missed out on victory in the feature of the day, the Champion Hurdle, with 7-1 chance Mellon, beaten by a neck by Nicky Henderson trained Boover Dare, who retained his title as a 6-4 on favourite. The first race of the day there, the Supreme Novices Hurdle, went to the Tom George trained Somerville Boy. The Ultimate Handicap Chase was won by the 5-1 favourite Coup Star Civilla, while Mick Shannon trained 13-2 chance Mr. Whittaker, the winner of the Novices Handicap Chase. One rugby line today, Rob Kearney expected to be fit for Saturday's Grand Slam decider with England. That's despite sitting out training today. They're merely managing his load, was the official line from Richie Murphy of the coaching staff this afternoon.
All right, thanks a lot for that, Richie. Be back in an hour with all the latest on the Champions League, Championship and everything else as well. Dan will be joining us for the football show, but it is rugby that we're going to stick with, because Ireland head to Twickenham on Saturday looking to secure a third Grand Slam. They will also be looking to make a bit of history and win away in both Paris and London for just the third time. The first was the Grand Slam winning year of 1948. The second came back in 1972 when they won their opening two games away against France and away against England, but then didn't get to play Scotland or Wales at home because they both refused to travel to Dublin because of the troubles. One of the Irish team was the Ireland and Lions legend, Willie John McBride, and I'm delighted to say he joins us on the line now. Evening, Willie John.
Good evening.
You did ultimately win a championship with Ireland in 1974, but that missed opportunity in 1972, is that something that still grates, that you never had that chance to win the Grand Slam?
Well, it does. It does grate a bit, and I can remember, I can recall quite vividly the feelings that there was at that time. Well, for, I suppose all over Ireland, but particularly in Northern Ireland, that Scotland and Wales cried off and then didn't fulfil the championship. Because, well, number one, from a rugby point of view, we were very much a sort of family unit, very much a family setup. And we had worked so hard in Ireland over those troubled years to keep the game going. And I can't recall any other games being called off, even in the worst days. So it was very disappointing that Wales and England, or Wales and Scotland, cried off. And England actually were very strong because they came and played an extra game after that.
You might take us back then to 1972, that opening game against France. You go to Paris and you win. That was the day before Bloody Sunday. At that stage, I assume Five Nations is going ahead as planned. Nobody expects any problems.
That's quite right. And we in rugby certainly didn't. We never got involved in the political or the troubles or anything like that. And we never assumed that it would turn out the way it did. And, you know, one of the things that particular year, it was good to win in France because I think we had four or five new caps that day. And we really were very much sort of regarded as also Rams. And it was a great win in Paris.
I was wondering that because obviously Ireland's record in Paris has never been particularly good. So when you go there and you win in the first game of the competition, even though there are several new players in, straight away are you thinking this is possibly going to be a historic season?
Well, obviously you think like that because the important thing in the championship is to win. If you win your away games, well, I don't know whether it's right or not, but you always regard that winning at home is a bit easier than winning away. Mm. And, you know, to win in Paris, I had a very poor record in Paris, although we beat France and Dublin quite often. But to win in Paris was something special. And then, of course, we went on a high to Twickenham. And, of course, to win in Twickenham was really out. That was really good. Not only did we enjoy beating England, but we always seem to enjoy beating England. But, you know, really, England have such choice and depth in their game compared to Ireland. It really was unique that we should beat them at Twickenham in that particular year.
Just before we get to the England game and what happened afterwards, so it's the day after the win against France that Bloody Sunday happens.
Yeah.
Are ye travelling home from Paris? Where are you when that happens?
Oh dear, I can't recall that, but I would have been certainly... I'd probably be home by that stage.
Hmm.
That happened in the afternoon, so I would have been either travelling or just having arrived home when I got the news.
Where were you living at that time?
I was living at that time here where I am now in Ballyclare.
Was that a difficult couple of weeks then in that build-up to the England game?
Well, it was. You know, it was. Because after that we had to go to Paris, or go to Twickenham.
Mm.
Am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we had to go to Twickenham. So there was a build-up, but there were rumours that Scotland and Wales might not fulfil the fixtures.
When did you get word of that happening then? Was that after you'd gone and already won at Twickenham?
Well, there were rumours after that, during that week. And then I think there was a delegation when that sort of turned out. I think Scotland, first of all, said they weren't coming. And I think there was a delegation from the Irish Rugby Union went over to talk to them, and they had another meeting and still said they wouldn't come, which was very disappointing.
Was it in any ways understandable, considering the way the troubles were escalating, that it was a 32-county team, that they were coming to Dublin, that they might legitimately feel that they could be a target?
Well, you know, you could twist this around many ways, but we could never understand that. And, you know, one of the things was which I admired with the English Rugby Union, they went to the players and said to them, and that was later on that year when they played that extra game, they went to the players and said, look, if you're prepared to go, we as the rugby union are prepared to sort of say, yes, that's okay.
Mm.
and they threw a bit of weight to the players.
Well, I think it was the year after when they did come, and their captain John Pullen said at the post match dinner, "We might not be very good, but at least we turned up."
That's right. Yeah. But no, it was all very disappointing because, you know, rugby union, and particularly the unique situation that there is in Ireland, in that we have an all-Ireland rugby team. We were very disappointed as players.
Was there anything you could do as players? Could you reach out and appeal to the Welsh and the Scottish, or was it very much left in the hands of the Blazers?
Well, the trouble was that the rugby union had taken it over and tried to sort of convince both the Welsh Rugby Union and the Scottish Rugby Union to change their minds, but obviously it didn't work.
Was there ever a possibility then of maybe playing the games in a neutral venue, trying to get the championship finished?
Well, I think that there were hints that, particularly from Wales, but, you know, that would have been a bit unfair, really.
Mm.
And the Irish Rugby Union weren't going to wear it anyway.
Yeah. How do you deal with that disappointment then, having won your opening two games, having won in France and England, and been halfway towards a Grand Slam, something that hadn't happened since 1948? How,
yes,
as a group, did you deal with that?
In my career, I had never been in that position.
Mm.
So it was very disappointing, and it's something that I look back on with regret that never happened, because that particular year we were playing with great confidence.
That confidence obviously carried over the next couple of years, where I think 73, every team ended up tied for the championship.
Yeah, well,
74, go on, Ireland win it.
That's quite right. France came over, I think, and played. I think they played an extra game at the end of the season.
Yeah, sort of friendly.
Then England came and we beat both of them. So that confidence was still in the Irish team. And then, of course, 1974, we did win the championship.
How did all that then affect relations between the players over the following two, three seasons? Was there a deeper respect for the English and French players, and maybe a breakdown with the Scottish and the Welsh players?
Well, not really. You see, the players were never really involved in Scotland and Wales. So there wasn't that feeling. It was within the rugby union, sort of the rugby union committees.
Yeah. So
that there was feeling, that there was great feeling of disappointment and had been let down, you know.
So when you met up for the Lions in 74, it wasn't a topic of conversation?
Not at all. It was long gone then, yeah.
Yeah. What was life like then for you around 72, 73, 74, living up in Antrim and with the troubles ongoing, playing for an all-Irish rugby team? We obviously know 15, 16 years later, there was the inadvertent bomb attack, which ended Nigel Carr's career, and we've had them in telling their story as well. Did you ever feel at risk? Did you ever feel that because you were playing for this all-Irish rugby team that you ever might be a target?
Well, you know, not only was it a target, but at that particular period, I was a bank manager, and that was bad enough in those days. But so you were always sort of aware of what was going on around you.
Mm.
And they were not pleasant days, there's no question about that. But I can remember at one period over that, I remember going, I think it was first of all to England, and there was some sort of threat on my life, and I remember that I had security. I also had security in Scotland, and then I had security in Dublin as well.
Right.
So there were those periods, but, you know, I was one of those people who said, look, you know, I've got to try and live a normal life.
Mm. That's not an easy thing to do.
I wasn't aware that I had any enemies or that, you know. And I remember saying to one of the security guys who was with me, saying, how real is this? And he said, I don't know. We don't know. We never know how real it is. So they were not easy days.
I can imagine not. And you're a very public figure at that stage, and you're leading the Lions, and you're coming back home, and you say you're trying to lead a normal life, but under these sort of threats, like those threats, are those letters that come in, or are they stuff that the security forces are finding out about?
Yeah, well, I wasn't aware. I didn't get any letters, but I think it was England that was the first one that I got. The security came. They actually came to, I think it was Harry McKibben, who was in the Irish Rugby Union at that time.
Right.
And it was Harry McKibben who came to me and said that this had become a sort of problem, and that I would be having security.
Would the team in general around then have had increased security as well?
No. I think a lot of the team didn't really realise what was going on.
Did you ever think, and talking with your family and having conversations at that time, that maybe it just wasn't worth it? Like when you're getting threats to your life, and we're talking about a period in Irish life when somebody's threatening your life, it's not something to be joked about.
Well, it certainly wasn't to be joked about, but I'm one of those particular people, you know, it was important to me. I felt that it was important to me to play for Ireland.
Mm.
It was something that I enjoyed. I believed in it. And having taken up rugby, you know, I believed in Irish rugby, and I would have done anything to keep it together.
Did it cause you sleepless nights?
Oh, well, it was something that was in your head, and particularly particularly when you met for rugby weekends and things like that, you know, you were aware.
Yeah. It's remarkable that it's 1972 is the last time that Ireland went to Paris and went to Twickenham and managed to win in the same year.
Yeah.
Have you been keeping a very close eye on this current group of Irish players?
Yeah, I'm absolutely delighted for them. I think it's tremendous. And, you know, the guy that I admire is Joe Smith, who's got this bunch together. But not only that, he has built very carefully over the last couple of years. He has built great depth into this Irish team because we've had a number of injuries, and yet he can slip new players in and they just fit in again beautifully. And he's done that tremendously well.
Would you have liked to have worked under a coach like Joe Smith, who's very methodical, expects a huge amount of hard work, a huge amount of research, a huge amount of study out of his players?
Yeah, well, you're asking me a very difficult question because, you know, my whole life was amateur. I don't know if I would make a good professional player, but certainly I would have loved to have worked with somebody like Joe Smith.
It's all worked out very nicely. We thought this might be a Grand Slam decided with Ireland and England going for it. England have sort of fallen apart in a way over the last couple of weeks.
I'm not worried about that. I'm just delighted that we're in the position we're in.
Looking at the progress then and that depth you're talking about, and does it give you more hope then heading towards a World Cup in 18 months' time?
Yeah, well, you know, rugby is a peculiar game and so many things can happen in such a short period. But certainly we will be going into it with our heads high. The one thing we've got to be careful with is to keep the injuries to a minimum. But with Joe Smith there, I'm sure that we'll take it step by step. I'm looking forward to that.
There's been criticism that maybe it's not exciting enough at times, even though we're scoring tries, that Ireland are trying to bulldoze their way through teams, that there's a lack of creativity. Do you see any of that?
Well, I don't know who these people are and what they know about rugby, but I'm very happy with the way things are. If we keep on scoring tries and playing the way we are, I'll be very pleased.
Yeah, a Grand Slam and three championships in 5 years. What is it about Joe Smith? What's he got, do you think, that separates him, even as an international rugby coach?
Well, I've met him on a number of occasions. He's a guy that I really do admire. But he's one of these people who has this aura, and this confident aura. And, you know, I haven't obviously worked with him as a player, but I can understand how players want to play for him.
Mm.
And he obviously goes into depth with his game and his plan, and he can get players to carry out that plan, which is tremendous.
Yeah, it seems as though he goes into such depth, but then can simplify it when it comes to it, that there's a total and complete understanding by the players of what Smith wants for them, which is maybe lacking in quite a few of the other teams at the moment.
I think that's right. And I think the other thing which I admire in Irish rugby and in Joe Smith, we don't get carried away with all this hype that we have around the game today. You know, he just says we'll take a step at a time, we'll look at the next game. And there's not all the hype before the game about and threats about what they can do and what they're going to do. He quietly gets on with it, and when the day comes, they're ready, and that's very important.
I wanted to ask you as well about Rory Best and his captaincy and his leadership and the sort of steely determination he has. He doesn't seem as though he's somebody who goes around sort of barking instructions constantly. He keeps his head down. He tries to do his own job quite well. but has that, as I say, that sort of steely determination that gets across to the other players. I don't know how I know you well him or how much you've come across Rory Best, but what are your thoughts on his captaincy?
Yeah, I like him. He's done a tremendous job there. And as you say, you know, he doesn't boast about what Ireland are doing. He's quietly modest about how things are, how he takes things on. And obviously, the players are reacting to him very, very well, which is good. And he's been there quite a long time now, and it's not easy to keep on being captain in, you know, in a situation like that, which a lot, there's a lot of pressure on him, and he has handled that very well.
You mentioned you weren't sure if you'd be suited to the professional lifestyle. Like, part of that is they go to Carlton House for 3-4 week stretches and might only get out for a couple of days here and there. There's an endless media cycle, an endless commercial cycle, facing press conferences every second day. How would you have dealt with all that?
Well, he has certainly coped with that all very well. But, you know, I would like to think that I coped with that very much on Lions tours. You know, Lions tours in those days, in my days, were about 4 months, 3.5, 4 or 5 months. And certainly when I was captain, I had to deal with that day and daily, as well as try and captain the side and keep with it. So I understand completely the pressures that he's under.
What's the key then to dealing with that? Is it always just keeping that end goal in mind? Are you trying to break it down into day-to-day, how you get through it to make sure you alleviate the boredom?
I think so. You just quietly sort of try and take it as it comes and deal with situations as they arise.
What are your thoughts then ahead of Saturday at Twickenham and how it all may play out? Do you expect England at home, with their pride very much stung after the defeats to Scotland against France, are going to come out all guns blazing? Or actually, do they look like a side very low in confidence that might struggle against a pretty rampant Ireland at the moment?
Well, you know, as I say, rugby is a very peculiar game. The one thing you have got to do is have the attitude right for the day. I've no doubt that the plans will be laid and every man will know what his responsibility is, but he must have his attitude absolutely right. I have no doubt that we can beat England. The one thing we've got to do is concentrate on our own game. And I'm sure Joe Smith will obviously have a look at England and see where he can break them down. But I think we've got to concentrate on us again and our game. And we've done that very well to date, and I'm sure we can do it again on Saturday.
Will you go along to Twickenham?
No, I'll be watching the game, I think, on television.
Very good. Willie John, it's been great to talk to you, as always. Thanks a lot for taking the call.
Thank you very much.
Off the ball on News Talk.